time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I told the Big 12 and the Big East to do this 15 years ago. The Big East is dead. The Big 12 is almost dead. Don't be stupid.
Pete Thamel.
A brat kicked on the sidewalk of a game.
With SI's Pat Forty.
A more fun, interesting, inclusive playoff. Take the prize, unwrap it, and embrace it. Do it. It's not that hard.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. College Football Management Committee set to meet Wednesday in North Texas. Are they at their favorite place?
Gotta be at that Gaylord Marriott thingy. Yeah.
Get the cream corn.
Get the queso ranch.
Queso ranch.
Get the cream corn. Get the steak. Get the queso.
Not even that convenient to the airport. That place is not.
No.
Yeah, but everything that is convenient to the airport's like horrible. So
yeah,
these guys don't do horrible.
No, they do not.
I think a few of them are probably flying in private too.
They are probably flying in private. There's some backroom deal on it. I mean, there's something. It's like on one of the bowl when we did our bowl investigations. We found this one hotel. I won't say where because we never could quite prove the deal. But they would make all the teams stay at this very, very nice hotel, overpriced, and then the bowl director just happened to have his daughter married there.
Oh, <Yeah. laughs> what a coincidence!
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is college football, but this is what also happens. The management committee might screw it all up.
Imagine.
So we had a widespread excitement over the summer when the 12-team playoff came out. The proposal, you know, we were arguing details. Should there be more home games? Should there be this or that? It was all, I think Clive Koff said, it's all in the margins. And then Texas and Oklahoma moved to the SEC and everyone got all hot and bothered and angry, and then they all hitting the brakes and you get these bizarre statements. West Virginia saying they're not going to vote for it. What? The Pac-12's not sure. Greg Sankey, who's under the heat lamp here with his peers, he just basically told the Orlando Sentinel he doesn't care. We can stay at 4. I can go to 16. It doesn't matter. This is about looking at the big picture of college football. He's right. I hope so. The Big 12, the ACC, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 should be running to this deal. If anyone can argue me wrong, please do. Running. Take the 12. Get yourself an automatic bid. Get yourself a chance to put someone else in there. Stop worrying if there's going to be 3 or 4 SEC teams in there. Stop letting personal animosity and politics get in the way of what's best for your league. If the Big 12 opposes this thing and tries to punt it, it literally could be the end of the Big 12, which is already pretty much on the doorstep of being over because they haven't supported this for the last 20 years. This is the only lifeline. You hit the Titanic. Get in the boat. Am I wrong, Pat Forty?
No, you know, you're right. That this is, I mean, the SEC should be the only league that's okay with 4. Everybody else should be saying bigger, 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 because the SEC is the only one that's been guaranteed to be in every playoff. And on one occasion have multiple teams in the playoff. And in perpetuity, now with you know, 16 teams is going to be guaranteed to be in a 4-team playoff. So everybody else should be giving their league a better chance to be in what matters, not the Duke's Mayo Bowl or the Sun Bowl or any other bowl game, any of that crap. It doesn't matter. It's nice little filler for ESPN for their, you know, inventory. It's okay for a few fans. Some of the players like it. Some of the players don't. But everybody should want to be in the playoff and should be trying to get an expanded playoff that lets their team, their conference, have a better chance. It's completely antithetical to want anything else. Now, the roadblock, of course, is very much aimed at we don't want the SEC to tell us what to do, and we sure don't want ESPN to tell us what to do and for ESPN to make all the money on the playoff. And I understand those reactions, but don't spike an expanded playoff out of spite for that and out of a network kerfuffle.
The strategy of the ACC, Pac-12, and Big Ten who found Jesus and suddenly objected to the playoff after really not saying much after it was announced, is a strategy of obstruction, not a strategy of outcome, because the outcome favors all of them. I believe the Big Ten, if you historic back the playoff and made it 12, would actually have gotten more teams in than the SEC over the history of the college football playoff. That's a good outcome. The Pac-12 hasn't had any good outcomes since Mark Helfrich was the coach at Oregon. People have already forgotten Mark Helfrich was the coach at Oregon. And the ACC has been a one-man band marching down the street for a long time with Clemson. They could use some people riding shotgun. So they get it. The SEC is pulling away from everyone. Everybody freaked out and decided they didn't like the process. We don't like the process. Well, guess what? You like the result. So let's get to the result. And the tension with the result remains, do we let ESPN broadcast the rest of this? Clearly, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten aren't going to let that happen. The ACC, they are contractually obligated to ESPN through somewhere around 2087. So they really don't have much say in everything. But the Fox-leaning, if you will, pardon the political pun, the Fox-leaning conferences, which are the Big Ten and the Pac-12, are not going to let ESPN be the sole broadcaster of this. They've made that very clear in their statements, and that is understandable. That is the one objection that makes some sense, because they're going to want a contract from Fox. ESPN's money is moderately dried up, not totally and completely, but a lot of it has been dedicated to the SEC. A lot of it will be dedicated to the playoff. There is a very smart fiscal rationale going forward of having two broadcasters of your postseason. And so that's the needle that needs to be threaded here. And threading that needle is going to be difficult because you're going to have to get ESPN to the table. You're going to have to give them some stuff. You're going to have to get them to take some stuff away. If you want this thing to start in what was the 2020?
2023.
Three. That's the earliest possible.
Or 2026.
That's the best thing for the sport. But no, but remember when everyone, the playoff pass, oh, this is the best thing for the sport. We're looking out for the sport. Yeah, that died quick. If we could summon some of that kumbaya over the queso and jalapeno cream corn in Dallas and focus on the actual issues and not the perceived issues, it would be much appreciated for progress. I do think I saw the first one somewhere on Twitter this week and I didn't click on it. But like, what would the 12 team look like? There's going to be an inherent pressure every week of what would the 12 team look like? And it'd be like, hey, George Kliavkoff, you guys are left out once Oregon ends up slipping on a banana peel somewhere along the line here. Like, do you really want to be left out? Or you can sign up for the new playoff. You know, Clemson looks very fallible this year. Hey, Commissioner Phillips, you sure you want to disagree with the process and not make sure that there's a little few more outcomes for your team? And we can just go through the whole line. Obviously, Dan's point of Big 12 is a great one. Yeah, here we are simmering over the cream corn again. Hopefully we can be outcome focused and not obstruction focused.
The Big Ten, they've got all these teams this year that look pretty good. You want to boil them all down to one and hope it works out?
Right.
I mean, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa. There's a lot of teams with a shot here. Why have one? We went back when they originally did this. Wisconsin would have hosted three different playoff games.
Yeah, which would have been awesome.
No, we don't want that.
Yeah, no.
Definitely don't want that. No way. We don't want that. Let's stay at
four. We didn't like the process, Dan. We didn't like the process.
I understand if this is all a bargaining chip. And I know there's a lot of ADs and people listen to this. Fox needs to be in on it because you want Fox to profit off the playoff and then have the funds from those profits, because those are the big games, to later filter that money back into television deals to the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and to a degree the Big 12. I get that. This better all be a bluff, because otherwise this is one of the dumbest things going. And there's nothing dumber than when the establishment of college football gets behind some idiotic idea like, hey, if we have name, image, and likeness, fans won't watch anymore. really? Right. How the TV ratings? How many 7-8 million person games? We've already had 5 games over 7 million viewers this season.
Yeah, I keep getting emails about how big the ratings have been on ESPN and Fox.
Boy, they really couldn't fill Penn State the other night or the Swamp. Nobody ever cared about that, but you guys repeated it and scaremongered and obstructionist and everything. But man, you had a lot of, well, this will ruin our our 100-year cultural tie with the fans. The fans will. Have you even heard of one fan? Like there were fans of like the NFL. Like I'm not going to watch because of Colin Kaepernick. No, they came back right. Like after 3 weeks. But yeah, sure. There were some people, right? Then it was like, oh crap, man, Mahomes is playing. Maybe I'll just take a peek. But fine, there were you knew some people like that. If you heard of one fan, that's it. I'm just not watching.
I'm so
that Clemson quarterback's in the Dr. Pepper commercial. I won't have it.
That's it. I'm turning off the TV as soon as I see it.
How can I enjoy Clemson, Georgia when the quarterback's in a commercial? That's offensive.
These two twin basketball players and Fresno State basketball are making money. I will not watch Alabama, Florida. You people argued this in front of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court. You tried to pull that. You're always wrong. You are wrong on this. Take the 12. It's laying there for you. I told the Big 12 and the Big East to do this 15 years ago. The Big East is dead. The Big 12 is almost dead. Don't be stupid. Make a deal. Get Fox in there. Fine. Get this thing done. Get your home fields. Get your game up in Madison. Get your game in Iowa City. If your stadium isn't winterized, that's their big thing on the home field. Few stadiums are not winterized. A few. Michigan's is. Ohio State's is. Minnesota's is. You know, some aren't. Fine. If your stadium isn't winterized, you get to play in Detroit or Indianapolis or something in your area. Otherwise, take the deal. If you do not make this deal, you are dumber than the predecessors that put you in all this trouble beforehand.
Yeah.
Remember, no. Jim Delaney, the great Jim Delaney. We might go Division III rather than have our players get paid. We might just walk away and go Division III.
They don't want Mountain Union, Dan. They don't want it.
This is what these people do. Don't do it again.
Yeah. No, look.
Don't be Jim Delaney other than taking $20 million off the top of a TV contract. Do that. I mean, you might as well.
They don't transition well. They don't embrace change real well in the college leadership landscape. But when the change comes wrapped in golden foil that says inside are untold millions of dollars, in addition to just a better playoff, a more fun, interesting, inclusive playoff, take the prize, unwrap it, and embrace it. Do it. It's not that hard.
The politics here are interesting to me because I think, Dan, to round out your earlier point on Fox, it's not just sharing in the profits. It's bringing in Fox to incentivize them to put a huge stake in the regular season. That's the key part with Fox here that I think needs to be discussed is the reason you don't want only ESPN to show the postseason is because you can't say, hey, Fox, why don't you spend billions on the pretty good stuff, but we're going to cut you out of the elite stuff. And the Big Ten and the Pac-12 need Fox at the bargaining table coming up very soon. And you know who really needs Fox at the bargaining table? The Big 12.
Absolutely.
Because they sent a Malkoff cocktail into Bristol. Now, Bob Bowlesby probably won't be around to negotiate that TV deal, but it certainly wasn't exactly holding hands and singing Kumbaya with them. So you need two big financial drivers. ESPN is there. They're established. They've spent their hundreds of millions on the SEC, and they have the ACC pinned down with their foot on their throat. You need Fox invested, and that's like that's the dessert. That's the incentive is to give them a funnel to the playoff. And so it makes sense why you need them at the table. And I don't begrudge anybody for holding out for that aspect of it. Just gifting it to ESPN, I can certainly understand the resistance there.
That should be the only resistance, though.
Yeah,
and you know what else it does? It's promotion.
Yeah, okay?
Right. It's hard to promote the sport, especially in this fractured television audience. You know what still gets huge ratings? The NFL. You don't think it's good for college football that the number one television show in America, Sunday Night Football, the Chiefs and the Ravens playing the other night, and NBC is promoting Wisconsin and Notre Dame.
Yeah, sure.
And Fox is promoting next week's, I don't know what game they got. Maybe that's noon. Whatever they're promoting.
I think that's Fox. I think because that's a Wisconsin home game at school.
The week before, they're promoting Notre Dame against Purdue. Like, you want them all on there.
Yes.
You want that promotion. It all goes hand in hand. NFL fans are college fans. College fans are NFL fans. It goes together. It's just take the deal. It's laid out there. If you're going to go, we weren't on the committee, or I'm mad at Texas, I'm just going to be Gordon Gee, and I'm going to say crazy stuff and not understand the system and think it's better for West Virginia to never have a road to the playoff, get out of the way. It's over. The train's leaving. Take the deal.
Do you think there's as big a compendium of dumb Gordon Gee quotes about academia, or does he just save them all for athletics? Because it's a hell of a move he's put together. Yeah,
I hope he's smarter on that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will see what happens. But that is the...
More importantly than the 12-team playoff, can we get a cream corn recipe from these guys this week? I would really like to see what's in that thing.
I'll contact the Grapevine, Mary. I've been there. I've eaten the cream corn. It's very good cream corn. I'll get a hold of it.
Okay, good.
I got to tell you, I'm not like, really a cream
Wetzel
corn
did
fan.
The deep dive on the Ames song. I'll do the deep dive on the cream corn.
All right. Get us a recipe, Pat. We'll do it. It'll be like HGTV next week.
Since we brought up Ames, I meant to say this on the Sunday pod. So I'm standing on the sideline at Cincinnati, and my position was essentially in front of the water coolers because I was trying to stay out of the way, not get killed, and not be in the way. And there were a lot of complaints on the Cincinnati sideline about the taste of the Indiana water. Like, it was multiple people. So there's the linebacker in Cincinnati who's from Indiana. At one point, somebody took a sip of the water, and he said, "Hey, Huber, the water in your state sucks." If the Bearcats had lost.
Too much limestone. Too much limestone.
Yes, we were staring at a tap water controversy, and all I could think about was, yes, I spend way too much time talking about delicious tasting and non-delicious tasting tap water. So luckily, the water controversy was thwarted. I did have some of the water. It was pretty hot that day. It did not taste particularly good.
Well, used to that Cincinnati water.
Yeah.
Right out of the Ohio River. We know that's clean.
The pristine Ohio.
All right. We're dubbing this Prove It Week.
Okay.
We have a few programs have kind of either popped up to make themselves look like they might be contenders or not, or maybe are underwhelming, but we want to see what they are. It is your chance to prove it. So we're going to start with a couple of these games. Let's start with Rutgers at Michigan. And to me, it's really Prove It is for Michigan. Certainly Rutgers is also undefeated, although they had they may be out two players after what is called an incident with a paintball gun led to some arrests in Piscataway. I don't know what exactly what were they shooting? More details have to come. But there was a paintball incident. Nothing like losing to Michigan because a couple of defensive players are out due to a paintball gun.
It's very sure, Cusciano took that one well.
Yeah, I bet he did. whose decision was it to suspend him? And who, if it was not Coach Schiano's, how did that conversation go, Greg?
It was an actual arrest. And I'm thinking they probably have a system. That's... Now, how do you get arrested with a paintball gun? I don't know.
I don't know.
But
I just
depends what you were shooting.
Behavior. Like, he must have been thrilled to get that call at 2 a.m. I'm sure that,
He's like, oh, my goodness.
Being the teddy bear that Coach Schiano is.
He wanted to go back to college. This is what you get.
Right.
All right. So Rutgers is at Michigan. Michigan is 3-0. They have looked very, very good in defeating Western Michigan, Washington, and Northern Illinois for whatever that is worth. It is time to prove it. I think their big prove it game is in a week against Wisconsin, but Rutgers is somewhat formidable. What do you want to see from Michigan that would prove it to you?
Throw the ball. Be able to be more than just a one-dimensional team. I mean, their running game is incredible so far, but this is a step up in class. You know, they have absolutely pushed around and had their way with Western Michigan, Washington, and Northern Illinois. And quite frankly, Washington shouldn't be a step up in class, but it is. So now a Rutgers team that is also 3-0. And remember, these teams played triple overtime last year, which was why one reason I'm really surprised looking that the line is like 18.5. And we'll get into this for the Race for the Case podcast later this week. But that jumps out to me. But I want to see Michigan be able to throw when you have to throw. I mean, so far, the passing game has been fine. It's been efficient. It hasn't necessarily been explosive. Ronnie Bell is injured now for the year. So do they have some big play receivers who can make some plays?
The Michigan pass game
Cade McNamara, the starting quarterback, has attempted 37 passes, which I'm sure somewhere in this great wide country of ours has been like a half for someone at Houston or
Ole Miss.
Something like that. I mean, 37 passes in three games. It's not a lot of passes. That's just the starter. Obviously, they have 49 pass attempts total.
And this is a team coached by a 15-year NFL quarterback who never didn't want to throw it. Like Jim Harbaugh, ultimate gunner, gamer. I got it. And this is who their coach. And they got an offense out of the 1930s. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah. So the Rutgers football players who are suspended, Max Melton and Chris Long. Max Melton has two interceptions and a block punt. They're both defensive backs, right? So two interceptions and a block punt for Melton. Long is a reserve who's just on special teams. But let's be honest, they don't have like spare starting defensive backs sitting around at Rutgers, right? So if there is a game to ease in the Michigan pass game, it would seemingly be this one. But yes, he was my small sample Heisman guy 2 weeks ago. Blake Corum is electric, the Michigan tailback. He's averaging 8.5 yards a carry. He's got 7 touchdowns. And I mean, he was mesmerizing to watch against Washington. Just like a complete jitterbug, unbelievable burst. Rutgers' defense has been great so far. It's been as salty as any against obviously the limited competition that the Scarlet Knights have faced. So you would have to think Coach Gianna is going to try to just really force them into the pass game. If there's one Big Ten matchup that's epitomized Michigan's backslide to Big Ten mediocrity, it would be the Rutgers game. They won 52-0 in 2019, Chris Ashe's last year. And it took multiple overtimes to win 48-42, and Rutgers had a field goal to win it that was missed. So if you're looking at where did Michigan's dominance go, I mean, I would think a lot of people would point to a team they beat Rutgers 52-0, 42-7 in back-to-back years, and that all of a sudden became an overtime tussle last year. So if Michigan wants to prove it has some Big Ten superiority, This is an interesting forum for them to do it.
I'd like to see them cover. I'd like to see a solid victory over Rutgers, and I'm going to continue to feel pretty good about Michigan.
What's the line, Dan?
12, huge. Was it 12? 18 and a half.
No, 18 and a half. Yeah. I'd like to see a 2-touchdown victory. How about that?
There you go.
Okay. 2 touchdowns, a solid victory. They're in control in the fourth quarter. That tells me this team is what it looks like going in.
You know what they say. Good teams win, great teams cover.
Arkansas fighting Sam Pittman.
Yes, sir.
They blew out Rice. They beat Texas by 19 at home. They blew out Georgia Southern. They're scoring 38-40-45. Their defense is 17-21-10. If this team was named anything other than Arkansas, any other SEC power, you'd be like, yeah, top 10 team. They've climbed to 16th. They get Texas A&M in their game in Arlington, Texas. They should feel right at home. There's a Walmart right across the street. Feels very homey from the gentleman from Fayetteville. The Fighting Sam Pittmans, are they legit? Well, there's a chance to prove it. Now, their next 4 games are Texas, at Georgia, at Ole Miss, and Auburn. So there's a lot of proving going on here. But are they just a product of Texas being Texas, or is this a legit team? What would you like to see from Arkansas?
I would like to see Arkansas move the ball against a very good Texas A&M defense. We came into the season thinking A&M would have one of the saltiest defenses in the country, and so far they have proven that in my mind. Texas A&M has the 9th-ranked total defense in the country, the number 1 ranked scoring defense in the country at 5.7 points per game. Arkansas has moved the ball at will against its pedestrian opponents. They're averaging 282 yards per game. It will be interesting to see if the same trenches that they dominated against Texas, they should at least be able to get a push up front against A&M. I have a hard time imagining they're going to get wiped out up front. So that's what I want to see from Arkansas in Jerry World. You know, Jerry Jones is going to be watching his Hogs with interest. I want to see if they can man up and bow up against Texas A&M interior. And remember, A&M's offensive line kind of stinks. They got four new starters. They haven't gelled together yet. They have a backup quarterback. There's a lot working for Arkansas to pull the upset in this game.
Yeah, I really actually love Arkansas in this spot. What I want to see, though, KJ Jefferson has been good, better than really I anticipated, better than he started. He wasn't good early in the first game against Rice, but since then, he's been solid. They hadn't had to throw it a lot, but he did. He threw it a ton very effectively against Georgia Southern, but it's going to be a different deal against A&M and that excellent defense, as Pete pointed out. But, you know, can he be a real high-level quarterback? Arkansas, you know, if you want to get really wonky about it, they've got some nice metrics. They are very good in terms of explosive plays. They have been very explosive this year and also good at limiting the other team's explosive plays. So they've got a big differential in that. People look at that. They're plus 11 in 20-yard runs and 30-yard passes versus their opponents through three games. They're also plus 3 turnover margin. They've done all the things you're supposed to do to win games, and they've won. They're 3-0. So I like them in this spot. But then, can KJ Jefferson have the poise and then be able to make some big throws against a very good defense?
Huge game for Arkansas. I don't know what would prove it. They could lose, and I still think they're making progress. It's just the nature of their schedule is so tough. But, boy, if they could win this, I keep saying it, but Arkansas needs to be able to recruit Texas, and nothing is better at recruiting Texas than beating Texas. Well, that's off. And beating Texas A&M in Texas. So this is a heck of an opportunity for Coach Pittman and the Hogs. And because their life's not getting easier if this thing goes to a quad, if we go to pods, right. And it's Arkansas, Texas, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. I mean, that is a really, really tough thing. And so they have to be good in recruiting Texas. They're just not going to be able to survive any other way. So this would be a big, big step for them. I would I'd like to see them win it. Would certainly prove it. I think that program's making enormous strides in 2 years, regardless.
If they do win and they have beaten Texas and Texas A&M in the first month of the season, how long does it take the request for a contract extension to land on Hunter Yurecek's desk from Sam Pittman and his brother, persistent agent?
I would just send it right to Frank Perdue or Sam Walton. I would skip your check.
Faster than the Walmart self-checkout line, which sometimes can be kind of slow.
Can you picture Sam Pitt with his contract just goes doot and puts it in the basket, leaves. He's got like a six pack of Bud Heavy and some onion, some pork rinds.
He was making fun of Bush Light on one of these. I'm starting to have a little bone to pick with Sam Pittman. I've been defending you all along, but he kind of joked about Bush Light in a little kind of condescending manner the other day on an all-access Arkansas piece.
Sam probably didn't get to be that size drinking light beer. Come on.
I mean, when Sam Pittman's looking down on your beverage choices, I'm really not feeling good about myself. Come on, man. Come on.
Time to look in the mirror, Dan.
He cashes that check with the barcode. You now have $40 million in credit at Walmart. Michigan State, 3-0. They win on the road by 17 at Northwestern. They blow out Youngstown State. They go to Miami and win going away against the Hurricanes. That's two road wins out of three. They crack into the polls, and we will see where they're at. They get Nebraska at home. They should beat Nebraska if they're legit. They also need to overcome a classic Michigan State problem, a persistent problem until D'Antonio really got them straightened out, which was every time things started going good, they'd blow an easy game. They were legendary for beating Michigan and then losing by three touchdowns to Indiana the next week. So hopefully the hangover is not too big up there in Beast Lansing. What would you like to see to prove Michigan State, which is way ahead of schedule on its rebuild under Mel Tucker, legit? What do you want to see to prove it, Pat?
Well, yeah, I think you just said it. Program maturity, i.e. consistency. Don't, you know, get full of yourselves and all of a sudden not be ready for the next game. Look, Nebraska is not good, but I do believe they are getting better. They were so bad in that first game against Illinois, and they were pretty respectable against Oklahoma. They were good, I thought, against Buffalo the week before. So I think that they'd better be ready for a game. If they're running around acting like they've actually done something by starting 3-0, they just need to put the tape back on from last year and say, oh, yeah, it's not that long ago we were terrible. So I just want to see them, yeah, show up, be ready. You know, if they can jump on them the way they jumped on Northwestern at the beginning of that game, that's a heck of a good sign. You got to be able to contain Martinez, Adrian Martinez, who maybe played his best game last week against Oklahoma. And Peyton Thorne's done a great job making no mistakes. He has to continue that this week.
This smells like an upset opportunity. Nebraska's full-on desperation, Frost full-on desperation. I could see him running Martinez like, you know, 25 times in this game. Like they need to win this game. If they don't win this game, it's, you know, it is spiraling over. As great as Michigan State's been, and we've been very complimentary of Mel Tucker here, his ability to really efficiently and effectively use the portal to rebuild a program that had atrophied because of terrible recruiting. So they get all the credit in the world. I just think that when we look back at Michigan State in 2 months, contextualize the wins at Northwestern in Miami. While impressive, because they're road wins are hard, especially in 2020 when you didn't play on the road for a while. I don't think those are going to be remembered as good wins, because I just don't think either of those teams is that good that they beat. I just sense there could be a little bit of vulnerability here for Michigan State. I would really like to see how their pass game continues to evolve. Obviously, Peyton Thorne's got 9 touchdowns. He's got no interceptions. He's completing 62% of his passes. They've been unbelievable. Kenneth Walker from Wake Forest is rolled in. He's ripping off 8.6 yards a clip. I am not ready. I'm more confident in Michigan right now and where they are than I am in Michigan State.
Well, I think I think everyone should be. Although Michigan State, you know, kind of has an identity, but these are different levels of, like, no one's saying Arkansas is going to try to win the national title. Michigan could be a playoff team. Like, if Michigan's trying to prove that they could be a playoff team, no one's expecting Michigan State. They had a 4.5 win over under coming into the season. This team wins 8 games, like, unbelievable season, right? If they can go, they got Nebraska, West Kentucky, Rutgers, Indiana. If they could go into the Michigan game at home 7-0, huge momentum, publicity, everything. So proving it is different for each thing. But are they going to win the Big Ten East? Doubt it. They got Michigan. They're at Ohio State. They still got Penn State at the end of the year. All right. Notre Dame. Notre Dame is 3-0. They have gone to overtime against what has turned out to be a bad Florida State team. Nearly lost to Toledo at home. And they were in a very competitive game against Purdue before winning by 14 after banning the giant drum. There was talk. So there was a couple questions about the drum, because the drum has been inside Notre Dame Stadium before. The drum is 100 years old. The big Purdue drum, which is not the biggest in the world, no matter what they say. Liars. They are lying. These Midwestern little towns like Ames and West Lafayette, they lie. They figure no one will show up to test it. There's a bigger drum in Korea. Anyway.
They lie.
There's two ways into Notre Dame Stadium, but only one could fit the drum. And it's in the end zone where it's so small. Remember, there was the famous brawl between Miami. Was it Miami or Florida State?
No, it was Miami. I was there, man.
Yeah. You could basically get two linemen next to each other can get through at one time, or else it's just a big, you know, log jam. So Notre Dame limited access to that due to COVID protocols. And because of that, the Purdue band was not allowed to drag their drum through, because they are not allowed to go in. That's why COVID kept the drum out. The COVID protocols did not allow anyone other than players and like refs to get through, their coaches. So it's a very limited. I don't know how the drum affected that. It probably could have been a way around it, but Notre Dame banned the drum. That was the best defense they played this season. They play Wisconsin, Soldier Field, noon game on Fox, big game. What do you want to see out of Notre Dame to prove that a legit team and someone was still a path to the playoff, Pete?
Boy, I need to see a lot from Notre Dame, because there hasn't been much right now. They have the 79th ranked defense in the country. Their rush defense has been 56th. These are Notre Dame is starting Wisconsin's castaway quarterback, and Wisconsin, the young savior quarterback, has really been worse than the one they cast away. So these are two offensively limited teams. Wisconsin brings an elite defense with them. Notre Dame brings a defense that is still searching for its identity under new coordinator Marcus Freeman, to put it politely. You got Wisconsin right now, number two in total defense, number one in rush defense. It will be fascinating to see how Jack Cohn reacts against the defense he played in practice every day, how Jim Leonard pins his ears back and goes at Jack Cohn, obviously limited. I believe Kevin Austin, Notre Dame star receiver, was targeted 8 times in the Purdue game, and he had 0 catches. So that's hard to do, to target a guy 8 times and have him not catch any, especially when he's arguably your best receiver. So, and Mayer only, their tight end, who's, you know, best tight end in college football, had 1 catch against Purdue. So seemingly, you know, Purdue defense went to take away Notre Dame's best, and Wisconsin has much better personnel than Purdue. So I need to see a lot from Notre Dame. I know they're underdogs. This game is going to be a slog. This is going to be right out of the Wisconsin, you know, just ground and pound collection. This is not going to be artistry. It is going to be a brat kicked on the sidewalk of a game.
The ground and pound collection. I'd love to see a video montage of Wisconsin winning or losing games 13-10. of which, yes, this one is very much capable of fitting into that wheelhouse. Yeah, I've got to see Jack Cohn step up. Really interesting, tricky spot for him playing against your old team and against, yes, Jim Leonard, who's going to have a book on him. And maybe he'll have a book on what Jim Leonard likes to do for Brian Kelly. So that goes both ways. But Notre Dame's passing yardage has dropped every game. Notre Dame's yards per play has dropped every game. Notre Dame's scoring has dropped every game. As the defenses have gotten better, they played against, and this is now by far the best defense. So good luck. I don't think you're going to be able to run the ball with much consistency because nobody has against Wisconsin. So get ready, Jack Cohn. You're going to have to complete passes to Kevin Austin and to Michael Mayer and to a lot of other people if you're going to get down the field and to score. Should be a really interesting like fan dynamic there in Soldier Field. It should be a lot of fun. I'm going to be at the game. Looking forward to the atmosphere for sure. But I do think this will be yet another grim defensive slog.
You call Kristen, Brian Kelly will be the only sober people in a 3-square-mile radius at that game.
Yeah.
There'll be some drinking there. Yeah. This is an LSU-level drinking, but there will be a lot of beer.
Chicago's a hell of a drinking town.
Yeah.
Hell of a drinking town.
This has Red River cocktail party, you know, neutral site, everybody's plastered the night before vibe on it for sure.
Brawls at the Streeterville Tavern late night. Over under punts. What do you think should be like 15 combined punts? I don't know. Could be some.
Yeah.
Punting. I Notre Dame's got to win, obviously, or else, you know, whatever. But I got to see something out of this line. 115th ranked in rush offense for their offensive line. They're tied for 125th in sacks allowed. The Notre Dame offensive line, like, they're not supposed to have burners on the outside. They're not supposed to have game breaking, you know, cornerbacks. They always are supposed to have an offensive line. And so that, to me, Notre Dame is going nowhere ever if their offensive line isn't good. They don't have the personnel otherwise to do this. So, all right, let's play another game. We got a lot of games. Sully set up a lot of games for us to play. Panic or patience? Sully. We just play like
alliteration,
risk.
Baby.
We just play that.
We're all just going to panic, by the way.
I'm just panicked. I'm always panicked.
Yeah. It's Florida week. I'm panicked.
That's it. Sully's got a lot of angst going on. All right. Panic or patience? We're going to go, should you panic over this performance or not? DJ Uiagalelei, Clemson quarterback and Dr. Pepper spokesman. He's 51.
He's got a chicken deal, too.
He's got a chicken deal.
No, Bojangles. He's Bojangles.
That's
Bojangles.
Right. Very Carolina's Bojangles, yes.
Well, if he doesn't prove his accuracy, someone's going to ask for their money back. 51-86, 475 yards, 1 TD, and 1 interception. Not exactly Trevor or Deshaun reincarnated so far. Panic or patience?
I'd say panic is justified at this point because it's been bad. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's been really bad. You know, the middle game against South Carolina State doesn't count. Total toss out. You take care of that. You get rid of that. They've scored. 17 points this year. Now, Georgia defense, excellent. We know that. Georgia Tech, you score 14, you barely hang on to win. You're 5 yards an attempt. You throw for 126 yards? Come on. That does not compute. And whether I wonder this, guys. I think this is a legitimate question to ask for some of these guys who are 18, 19, maybe 20, who all of a sudden you are a pitch man. I'm not saying it's too much for your focus. I'm saying it puts more pressure on you. You all are a young person who has suddenly become a professional since July, okay? And there is more pressure on you because you are now on a Dr. Pepper commercial. Maybe he's not handling it well for that reason. I don't know. He hasn't connected well with his receivers. Justin Ross got some criticism in the Georgia game for the pick six. That was Dabo Swinney put that on him. Dabo is trying to protect DJ in terms of from criticism. But so far, it's just not working out at a place that's used to having Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. So the expectation level is that high, and he's nowhere near looking like the guy who nearly beat Notre Dame in overtime last year. He looks like a guy who is in over his head and trying to figure things out.
My panic would be around the offensive line of Clemson because that unit has underachieved and dragged that program down, quite frankly, the past two seasons. And I really think that's the root of all their problems. Look, they were just not going to magically replace Travis Etienne. He was the best running back in ACC history the last 25 years, the most productive. They don't have a great answer there. They have a decent answer there, it appears, in Will Shipley. If that offensive line does not gel, come together, and establish some semblance of dominance, Clemson is going to get tripped up in one of its many mediocre games left on the schedule, whether that's at NC State, whether that's at Syracuse is the fourth-ranked defense in the country. That program's tortured Clemson over the years. That's a road game. At Louisville's a road game. Look, I'm sure SEC fans are just snickering at that notion. But Clemson has been pedestrian. There's no other way to say it. The backs are pedestrian. The O-line is pedestrian. And DJ has been not good. And I do think his lack of production in game five of his career as a starter essentially is a symptom of a lot of what's going on around him. He's also not been accurate. There are flaws. Look, he's not Trevor Lawrence. We all knew that was going to happen. So I maybe have a little more patience with him, but I've run out of patience for that Clemson O-line. That is a weak unit. You wonder if Dabo has to make a coaching change there. You wonder if they have to go to the portal to bring in higher-end talent. It just hasn't been working out.
You don't fix that during the season. That's the problem.
Correct. You cannot microwave an offensive line. That is, yes. So that is where my panic is rooted.
Are you worried that Sheriff Bosworth is going to arrest DJ for poor play in Fansville?
It's entirely possible. DJ better watch out. Be careful wherever he goes. If he sees Sheriff Bosworth, go the other way.
Well, they're always hiding from him because he knows that they're up to something in Fansville. Which they usually are. Oklahoma offense scored 23 against Nebraska. Lowest total since a loss in 2016 to Houston. I don't think the Spencer Rattler Heisman campaign's going all that great. Panic or patience, Pete?
It's funny. Talked to some NFL people this week working on my Cincinnati story to kind of get a feel for where Desmond Ridder is. And NFL people do not like Spencer Rattler. He has very much cooled in the eyes of the NFL. I think the notion of him as a top five type pick is quickly slipping away. So I would be panicked if I was Spencer Rattler, and here's why. Caleb Williams, freshman quarterback from Gonzaga High School in D.C., I think has a much higher ceiling than Rattler long term. He's 6'1", 218 pounds, was one of, if not the top quarterbacks in the country on the camp circuit. People raved about Williams in a very, very rare way. Quarterback guys I trust compared him to like a Russell Wilson. So it would be interesting to see if Rattler continues to be good but not great, if a window opens for Williams to start getting some more snaps. I mean, think about that Oklahoma QB room now, is it's loaded and it doesn't wait for anybody. So again, I'm not suggesting that's going to happen imminently, but I am saying that Caleb Williams is sitting there. It will be interesting to see as they get into the Big 12 if Rattler is still up and down.
The reason to have less patience with Rattler than some of these other young quarterbacks is because he's already been a starter for a full year. So there's much greater likelihood that what we're seeing from him is what he is, period. It's not like, you know, he's just feeling his way into his first month as a starting quarterback. This is, you know, I'm looking here like game, I don't know, 16 or something as a starter. And he's okay. I mean, he's not bad, but I don't look at him and see it. He certainly is not along the lines of what Oklahoma has had at quarterback recently with Jalen Hurts and with Kyler Murray and with Baker Mayfield. And I don't know whether that the fundamentals are in place everywhere else at Oklahoma if you don't have great quarterback play to be like a playoff team. The other thing, here we go. You want to talk about more, you know, pressure that you've put on yourself. And I don't blame these guys for taking the deals by any means. Get the deals, have the deals. But he signed a deal for not one, but two cars not long ago. And there's going to be people sitting in the stands in Norman watching saying, this guy's got a charger and a truck and he can't hit the wide out on a go route. What's going on here? So, you know, there's just going to be a lot of added pressure on him if this continues to go this route. And Pete's right, though, that like they've got other players at that position. And if you're 15 or so games into your starting career and you're still okay, you wonder whether Lincoln Riley may be getting a little bit itchy to see what else he can do there.
Yeah, you wonder how bad it gets for certain players. I'm not saying this is going to happen with Spencer, where like the billboard for the car comes down. Like these guys. Like normally a car dealer isn't making a deal until it's like, okay, we want Baker Mayfield to sponsor, you know,
right.
Cleveland area Ford dealers. We feel pretty, you know, Josh Allen will be, no, you know, these are college guys. So
no, this is the best thing about these deals is this is like what was going on with recruits when they were buying them against the NCAA rules. It's like,
yeah,
you're paying them under the table and then you're hoping they're good. But how many of them that's caused scandals weren't that good? And people paid out the, you know, out the ying for Hartley Dykes.
I could have had a lake house instead. I bought a linebacker. Yeah.
Well, remember like Rhett Bomar, right? Remember Rhett Bomar, Pat, sure. early in our time covering national colleges, number one recruit in the country, got him out of Texas. Dad was a coach. Like, he was supposed to be everything, and he ended up, I think, transferring to Sam Houston. He might have still made the NFL, but, like, it's not linear. These guys bust at about a 50% clip.
It's hard. All right, I got an update on the Rutgers situation. You want to know why? You want to know why they were suspended? I cannot argue with this. On Monday, September 20th, the Rutgers Police Department responded to the area of Livingston campus for a report of three student victims that were struck with paintballs discharged from a motor vehicle.
Oh, gosh.
There were minor injuries. One victim was hit in the elbow at close range. Another hit in the left arm and lower back. And a third was hit in the lower abdomen. Look out. That's not cool. Lower abdomen.
How you don't want to take a paintball there.
There was some bleeding. They had bruising and welts. So these two decided to play drive-by shooting or something. What? You just gunning down local with a paintball. First off, not cool to be shooting anything near a school these days. Return fire.
I mean,
if you're those
students or whoever's being shot, you think you're being shot.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Or some guy nearby.
Yeah.
If I'm seeing like a gun, I mean.
Oh, panic.
Yeah, you're out. That's not cool at all. So it's funny because it's paintball, but not really. Not for the poor guy's lower abdomen. Ohio State defense ranked 118th in total defense. Gave up a 503 to Tulsa, 612 to Oregon. Pat, panic? Let's not even forget patience.
Yeah.
No. Level right. of panic.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, even like a crazy Buckeye fan is panicked. Everyone's panicked. Not good.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm panicking on all these things, but I'm definitely panicking on their defense. My gosh. I mean, I was surprised watching Minnesota when Minnesota gets 31 points after Ibrahim gets hurt. I was really surprised watching Oregon just push down the field consistently over and over and over and score 35. But Tulsa, when I was 21-20 in that game, and Tulsa, which only managed 17 points against UC Davis, is right there in the game. I was like, there is something wrong at Ohio State. They've got an issue. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going on. You know, maybe it is just too many young people and being poorly coached or poorly aligned in places, but they've got some issues to fix because the competition after Akron this week, which doesn't count, but the competition will not be easy the rest of the way. And the way they are playing, they're going to lose two or three more games. Now, they could improve, but I've got to see it. Right now, I'm hammering the panic button.
Yeah, it's obviously a confluence of reasons to panic, right? They've obviously changed defensive play callers, going from Kerry Combs to Matt Barnes, who called the Tulsa game. That didn't seem to make a distinct difference at this juncture. Also, I'm starting to question just the level of their personnel. They have a lot of really good young defensive players. You have JTT, the freshman lineman from Seattle. You have Jack Sawyer, who was the other top defensive end recruit in the country. You've got some inside guys like Tyleek Williams, who played a little bit more, who's also a true freshman. So maybe you're seeing a little bit of a shift to young talent over veteran guys. But in terms of defensive tackle and in terms of linebacker, and then Seven Banks is sort of mysteriously not played this season, who is going to be their top corner, who is expected to be, you know, first, second round pick. Josh Proctor, the safety's hurt. Like, I think they may have a scheme issue combined with a personnel issue. And certainly, you have to think that we talked about this in the last pod, that maybe Penn State is the favorite in that East right now. I still want to see a little more from Michigan and Michigan State before I put them there. But Ohio State is as vulnerable as they've been in the Big Ten in 5 or 6 years.
I'm we had no patience for anybody.
Widespread panic, isn't that a bang?
That's pretty much it. It's pretty much
a band and a subtitle for the podcast. Yes.
All right. Well, speaking of widespread panic, this story crossed my thing. I guess we can. I don't know. It's kind of legal, but I'm not sure where people courting it. A Virginia woman is facing. She's just sentenced to 12 years in prison for a coupon scam. The coupons. She has used her graphic arts skills to create fake coupons that she then sold to people online, which apparently is a thing. And stole $32 million.
Come on.
Well, there were $32 million in coupons to fraud. I don't know how much she made off of it. I didn't look that deeply into it.
How many coupons is that? Because, like, the coupons I'm used to seeing are, like, 59 cents off of potatoes or something. I mean, this, like, how many do you have $13 million worth of fraud?
$32 million! And like, what do you pay it?
Coupons.
I mean, come on.
Are there people out there so desperate to save 50 cents on, you know, deodorant that they pay 25 cents online to get the 50 cent?
I don't know.
Then you only save 25 cents. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Even more bizarre, Kimberly Clark is a company that she defrauded $9 million. $9 million in fake coupons. You know what Kimberly Clark makes?
They're like toiletries or something?
Yes. Yes. How much? $9 million in toilet paper? $9 million in Depends adult diapers?
That's like a century of Auburn home wins. You could TPO.
Wow. Maybe that's it. Maybe Auburn bought them all. I mean, who needs that much adult care, quote unquote?
I don't know. This is astounding.
We all will eventually, Dan.
$9 million? Hell. I'm disturbed that there was $9 million worth of fake coupons for that. Unilever, $2.5 million was stolen from them. They make food, including Hellman's, Breyer's ice cream. That's good. Pure Leaf tea. Cup of soup. Who doesn't like a cup of soup? A lot of sodium in those things. A Klondike bar. $2 million in Klondike bars. You get that much tea, you need the adult diaper. That stuff runs through you.
I do like the health warning you put out there for people. A lot of sodium in those.
A lot of sodium in a cup of soup. I'm just like, I'm going to pay this lady. What are you doing, hon? I'm paying this lady, $500 to get $800 in coupons on Depends. What the hell is going on in this country? She would design the coupon so it would work
And then you'd buy the coupon. She'd email it to you. And then you go to like CVS and you use it. It's not a Groupon.
I am completely gobsmacked that this whole economy existed and that she could somehow bilk $32 million out of it.
In 3 years.
In 3 years. That's hustle. That's nearly $11 million a year worth of coupon fraud. I mean,
wow.
She works hard. Give her credit for that.
Wouldn't you just quit after making $10 million in coupon fraud?
That's the thing.
Go buy a couple margaritas, sit on the beach.
That's the problem, man.
Kick your feet up next to Clay Helton and Charlie Weiss and all the other people who figured out ways to get paid tens of millions of dollars to not work.
Guys, nobody ever quits the con.
I got paper towels. Want a Klondike bar?
Nobody ever gets off the grift.
It's unbelievable. Well, she's getting 12 years in the clink, and I bet that that toilet paper in the prison is not as soft as the cottonella. Pretty scratchy, I would think.
Where is she from? Do we know? Where's she
Virginia.
Going?
Where's she...
Okay, Virginia. She's going up the
she's
river
going to
in Virginia.
Federal. She's going to Fed prison, but that would be no camp because this is 12 years.
Right.
This isn't like the Aunt Becky camp.
No.
No, you're doing a hard time. Again, these criminals. What were you in for? Stole a bunch of Depends. We'll be back later this week for the race for the case picks. Currently, someone smart is in first place. Oh, it's me. 16-7-2. Pete, 14-10-1. Pat, 11-13-1. Sully, 10-14-1. We'll try to improve when we make our picks. Come on back on Thursday. Thank you for listening. Continue to share us on social media. You guys are doing a good job with that. More reviews, I guess, subscriptions. Tell your friends they're missing out on all the fun if they're not listening to us.
We got a shout out on Big Ten Network today. They're listening to us there.
Dave Revson, yeah.
Yep.
Friend of the pod. I mean, it's all happening. And be careful with your couponing. Talk to you later.
Hey, I think she's going to make a killing in prison.
That's a good point.